I'll start off with a couple of personal anecdotes just to loosen it up a little bit. I went over there after Thanksgiving, after I washed up the dishes from Thanksgiving, and spent the next 3 weeks over there. And I went with a group of doctors and nurses. I'll tell you about those in a minute. But just to let you know what a rough trip it was, initially on I fell in a big city called Wuhan. I was walking around doing one of these things, and a jagged piece of slate that was part of the sidewalk caught my toe, and I went down on my knee, and so I spent the rest of the 3 weeks in mortal agony on crutches. Luckily, I was with a group of healthcare workers, so every night there they were in my hotel room and administering to my poor knee and arguing over what was the best remedy. In the end, I was fine. Also, in the most remote pocket of rural inland China, I lost my passport. And so there I was contemplating the rest of my life in a dungeon there, and I had to be called down to the local police station, and I spent the day there, and they asked me to write an essay on what happened, and I was with the missionary who was leading the trip, so I wrote my essay, and I handed it to the official there who knew English. She couldn't read it. She couldn't make out my handwriting. It was so bad. Handed it up to the next level of official. He couldn't read my handwriting. Up it went, you know, hour after hour, and here I am sweating it out. Finally got back to the missionary. He couldn't make out the handwriting. So finally they got to me to stand up and to read my essay, and I couldn't read my handwriting. So eventually somebody did something, and I was able to get out of the country.
Can you read your notes?
No, but I have these. Maybe they'll help. How did a nice girl like me from Bainbridge Island end up in central China? Well, I was recruited. I am a journalist for the Bremerton Sun, and also in my off hours, I am the communicator for the Southwestern Washington Synod and write things for them, newsletters and articles and such. And occasionally, I write for this publication called The Lutheran, which is the main body of the Lutheran Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, their main newspapers. So, and they wanted somebody to go cover this effort, and they made it worth my while. So I took a 3-week leave of absence, and we went ahead and went. One of the first things we had to decide, my husband and I had to decide, is it safe for a journalist to go over to China? And we decided no. So what we did was, with the missionary helping us, I went over incognito, and I went over as a tourist, and various other identities, and that was the way we did it. The group I went over with was called China Service Ventures, and it's a group that is connected to the ELCA, but it is not part of it. It is made up of ELCA congregations, hundreds of them across the country, who support this China Service Ventures, based in St. Paul. They go organize mission trips over to China, the Xinjiang area of China, maybe several of them a year. This one was different because it was a health care team. And we ran into problems, and eventually we were kicked out of China. I'll show you, I won't baffle you and with a bunch of Chinese names that I would surely mispronounce, but I'll just show you just generally where we went. Here's eastern China, right here. Hong Kong's down here. Beijing is up here. Beijing. And I was Wuhan. And Xinjiang, which is the base for China Service Ventures endeavors here. And so we were in this area, and then we went into this very, very remote countryside over in this area here, into the Henan, Hubei, and Shanxi provinces which are very, very rural and very, very poor. And they have not gotten any benefit that of the new Chinese economy that these coastal cities have. Trade with the outside world never made it here. Higher standing of living never here. It's as it was 100, 200 years ago. These provinces are among the most populated and also among the poorest rural villages in all of China. Our group consisted of about 14 people, lots of nurses and doctors and church workers from the United States. And we met up with a second group of graduate Chinese students in Hong Kong before we went on our trip. And so altogether, these two groups were about 14. And we all got together in Hong Kong. Our mission was to go into these rural areas of China and perform health screenings on young school-age children. The idea being to start a base of data that this China Service Ventures then could see where the need was, and then over the years provide services to these children to increase their nutrition. The problem with a health team going over there at this time has to do with AIDS, and this is really the underlying reason why we were eventually prevented from doing the work that we came over to do. In the 80s and 90s, China had to face up to a problem of AIDS as it has, particularly in these poor provinces. It was a little bit behind the gun because it had not acknowledged it until it had gotten out of control. It's not anything like Africa, and it never will be, not even on the same level. Nonetheless, it was a problem. China refused to get outside help as far as blood transfusions, and so created its own, and it was tainted. And that's how it spread. And so today, while it's general knowledge and it's been reported all over the world that there is an AIDS problem in these areas of China particularly, China is only now beginning to face it. And they're still very, very reticent to let outsiders come anywhere near this AIDS problem. And when you're traveling with a bunch of doctors and nurses, this is probably the underlying reason we were told to leave. We were the first health team to go over there with the Lutheran Church, and so that's probably the whole underlying reason that we left. The first part of the journey was marked with success. We traveled north from Hong Kong once we met up and went to Wuhan. I know some of you have visited Wuhan, big fifth largest city in China. Got our bearings, met our escorts, and then we went north even more to Xinjiang. And as Frank was saying, Xinjiang is not only the center for the work of China Service Ventures, but also right at the heart of a Lutheran effort that's been there for 150 years. Once we were in Xinjiang, we went out to three local schools in the Hudian Township, and it was really an eye-opener. The first school we went to, these were primary schools, was what they call a key school. And a key school is where party members' children go. They're a little bit better. They have a few more resources. And this is where, if you're a Chinese peasant, you want your kid to go. When we got there, after riding on this dusty road for ever so long with potholes and the whole business, my knee just killing me the whole way, it was really something to see. An ancient building, middle of winter, no heat. No heat, No lights. No school supplies. No teaching resources. All it was a building maybe about this size, a cement building, crumbling, with big empty rooms. And all the very much overcrowded. The class size was about 65, average class size, about 65 young people. And so they would come there, and they'd just be all bundled up, you know, with all these layers and layers of clothes. And in some cases, there were desks, and they would get what instruction they could, no books or anything like that. And I couldn't make out what the teacher was teaching, but it was mostly just oratory. There was a blackboard. And I don't know if they still teach Maoist teachings in the schools there or not. I could not make out what they were teaching, but it wasn't reading, writing, and arithmetic, that's for sure. And there's a little outside pit for a potty, no playground. This key school had a garbage dump burning next to it, and the smoke and the stench of this garbage dump was overwhelming. Some of the younger nurses that I was with was overwhelming to them, and they began to cry, a lot of them. It was just sad. So here, we got a very good welcome at this school, and our team came with many, many gifts and presents, including backpacks, school supplies, pencils, papers, erasers, all those things. So there was a big joyous time, photo op, if you will, of meeting in the courtyard and doling out the gifts. Then it was time for our health screenings. So I can't tell you what a seasoned group of healthcare workers this was. These are mission people who have been on many missions before to Africa and where have you. And so they knew exactly what they were doing. And they did things like take weight measurements, height, hearing, body fat, basic type of data. We were prevented at that school from doing any more hearing because our watchers didn't want us doing hearing, and so we didn't. But so we did that. A doctor that I befriended there, I asked her, what's the condition of these kids? And over I'd ask her that throughout that, and she said, it's okay. Could have been worse. They were generally healthy. They were very, very thin, very, very thin. And there was some evidence of it. Is it scabies or scabies? I don't know what it is, but generally they were very, very thin. Beyond that, that key school, the best that there was in the small peasant village we were at, we went to two other elementary schools, primary schools, and they were way off the beaten path, and they were not key schools. Conditions were even more austere there. The kids hadn't seen people from the outside world and were very, very shy, and the teachers and officials there were very controlling of what we saw, and the schools were you just don't know how any learning can take place in something like that. So again, it was very sad, and we were permitted to do health screenings there. And those three schools, they got quite a lot of data. And they are planning another healthcare trip in June. One of the great successes of this trip was a milk deal in these schools that I want to tell you about. The missionary who led us, his name is Pastor Steve Ray, and he's a pastor down at Emmanuel Lutheran of Tacoma. And he spent the last 15 years in China. And he really did a lot of groundwork to make this milk deal come across. And what he had planned was that 416 children in these primary schools would receive a packet of milk each day they were at school, 5 days a week, as part of a nutrition program. You wouldn't believe what he had to go through, months if not years of planning to accomplish this, and then it almost fell through. But this is probably the heart of our mission, was actually doing this milk deal. We were just so closely watched, I can't tell you. There were people, government watchers, party officials, watching our every step as we delivered this milk to these schools, and then photographing me as I chronicled the events and watching where I was taking pictures and trying to make out my notes. It was just really something. These kids probably hadn't ever gotten milk in their lives, and it was something to see them receive this. One little girl wouldn't drink her milk, and we asked her why. She wanted to take it home to her sick and dying grandfather, and that's where that was pretty darn sad. That's what we did there with the milk. Some of the nurses and doctors had some reservations about giving this milk to the kids, although we didn't really express it very much to the missionary. This is government-issued packets of milk, and it's not anything you'd probably give your grandkids. It's very, very sweet, and some other things in it, too. And the concern among the nurses and doctors was that the children would develop diarrhea and tooth decay. We don't know. Yeah. Back in Xinjiang, one morning around 6 o'clock, I was up in the lobby because I was watching the missionary, the school officials, our government watchers, and the dairy people put together the final papers for this agreement. And I can't tell you how moving it was for me to watch this. If you can imagine, pretty nice hotel lobby, completely dark at 6 in the morning because they don't turn on the lights till much later because it costs too much to turn on the lights. And here we are sitting on a leather couch, all of these people, and I'm kind of off to the side. And here's the missionary just reading this proposed papers that he hasn't signed, just to the letter, and they're talking and putting the final, crossing the final T's and I's on this thing. And I thought, what a great victory for this missionary. What a great victory that he had to come halfway and drag all of us halfway across the world to provide packets of milk for a year for 416 kids. Just the enormity of it was overwhelming, and I'm glad I got to see that. That night, the missionary had a press conference at the hotel, and the local government-controlled media was trotted out there, and with great fanfare, they signed the papers. And it was really interesting to see how they clinch a deal in China. Steve, the missionary, actually doles out the money as the camera is rolling, and they sit there and they count it in front of the camera, you know, and it's got to be right exact to the bill. Thank goodness they counted, right? And that's how it was done. And the next day after this big press conference, it was on TV and in the local papers as a great victory for the Chinese government. Well, at the very same time, the Chinese government was preventing us from ever doing it again. Can you see the dichotomy? They were taking steps behind the scenes where you couldn't see that we weren't able to go out to these schools because it was just getting too close to what they didn't want us to see. And the way they were preventing us from doing this is they raised the fee tenfold that it would take us to get from Xinjiang, that hotel, into these outlying areas. You have to be escorted wherever you go by tenfold, making it out of the question for a shoestring operation like this to pay. So it was really kind of a victory and not a victory, you know. And I don't know if we'll ever get out there again. The missionary at the time was saying, this does it. But then now he's saying, well, we'll negotiate it. We'll negotiate it. So I don't know, but it was a really interesting to see that. This is what Frank talked about. Also in Xinjiang, we visited the Nangong Christian Center. And this is a large church that was started by Dan Nelson in 1896. And I wish you could see this church. Oh, I wish you could see it. I don't know why, but we went at night, late at night. We took a taxi over there, and so it was all dark, and maybe around 10 o'clock. And when the taxi pulled up, I thought, we got to be at the wrong place, because here was this crumbling. It looked like a ruin. I mean, it was a mess, this structure. And I thought, well, this is a construction zone. We're supposed to be going to this church. But no, this was the church. And I'm not sure that it had ever been touched since 1896. We were just no landscaping. It was just holes, muddy holes that we tried to negotiate around, you know, me and my little crutches there. And we, three very nice women brought us into the fellowship hall, and we sat down with tables and benches. And we had nuts and bottled water and bananas. And they told us a little bit about the church. And this is an officially sanctioned church, so it's okay for the government to have this church there. And these people in this church had applied to the local government for a loan to do some renovation work here, and had been turned down because the area of Singyong is so poor that we were told that the Chinese government does not want to waste its resources here. That's when one of the church workers that was in our healthcare team got up, and she walked over to one of the women, and she handed her a check from her congregation for $1,200. And her congregation and them had a sister relationship, and so that'll help. And there's not a doubt in my mind that that church is going to be rebuilt, which is good, because every Sunday, 1,500 people show up, and the church to worship, 1,500 people. And because the church isn't able to, I mean, if you walked in upstairs, you'd fall through the floor. So they worship out in the courtyard. Around the year, they worship out in the courtyard. That late that night, while we were there, despite the lateness of the hour, we heard a worship service going on. And so we asked if we could go and see what was going on. They said no, so we went anyway. And so we walked in, and here were about a couple of dozen elderly women having a song praise worship in a sanctuary that didn't look any different, really, from any other sanctuary. And it was very, very moving. And we joined them in song and praise. And then we left before it was over. And also, I wish you could have been there. It was really, really something. And that church is in my heart from now on. I saw other churches out in the countryside. This is a real wild estimate, but the best one I could come up with, a number I've seen again and again, there are about 100,000. Excuse me. I think I'm going to say, I want to tell you how many Christians there are in China. Okay. That couldn't be right. Let's say 100 million?
Yeah, it is.
100 million? Okay, 100 million Christians in China. That's the best guess, 100 million. Of course, it's such a large country, that's not a lot.
1%.
1%, is it, Frank? Yeah, that's about what I figured, 100 million. Catholic, and about 60 million maybe Protestant, of which the Lutheran presence is very strong. As Frank told you, Lutheran presence started back in the 1800s when missionaries, Protestant and Catholic missionaries, pretty much went in and said, okay, you take this area, we'll take this area, we'll take this area. And the Lutherans ended up in the Singyong area. And they really planted the seed of Lutheranism in this area, as others did down the Bible Belt, what's now known as the Bible Belt. And of course, then you have to imagine the challenges faith had in the 20th century, the Kuomintang, and then Mao Zedong taking over in 1949. 300,000 Christians were killed. in the 1950s. And when Mao Zedong took over in 1949, all the missionaries left, supposedly that was the end of it. And then you have to remember the famines that killed millions due to Mao's policies. And then, of course, there was the Cultural Revolution, which erased the history over there. And you can't imagine what these people have been through. You just can't imagine. And that oppression of that century, of course, is what you see today. But guess what? Christianity survived, and it flourished. And the missionaries are back. Most people in China worship in secret house churches. And I did not have an opportunity to see one of those. But they are in a house like yours or mine, and it's done very quietly. There are two groups of Christians that the Chinese government does sanction, but by far it's in the secret house churches. And it's growing, from what I can tell. The problem with missionary work in China is that it's so polar opposite to the Communist Party and the way the system works over there. And I left with a great deal of sadness in my heart that I still have, wondering if mission work and Christianity in China is even possible. But of course, it's survived all these years, so maybe I shouldn't be so pessimistic. The problem is that, at least in rural China, your ticket out of poverty and your ticket to a better life is joining the party, because through that, you can get a good education. You can learn English. You can go on to college. Mind you that 50% of the kids in China do not make it past middle school. So you can get all of these things. You can get a better apartment. If you get way up in the party, you can get, you know, nice clothes and the whole business. And the problem with Christianity is that it's also tied to the democracy movement. So if you're a Christian or a Lutheran, it behooves you to keep it quiet, because you're not going to go anywhere in the party. All of the top party officials I met were Taoists. And so it's not something you're going to wear on your as a badge over there, because it's going to work against you. And there's not a doubt in my mind that Christians are being persecuted over there now. So if you are a Christian, then it's going to work against you if you want to use the only option that you have to better your life for your family and for your kids. Now, this might be different. Of course, it's different in Hong Kong. This might be different in the big cities like Beijing. And it surely must be different in the big coastal cities like Wuhan and all of that, where, of course, you have the Western influence and there are many more opportunities to get employment. And it's probably not so tied down or oppressed as it is in the countryside. But so it makes mission work very, very difficult. And if you're doing a health care mission when there's an AIDS epidemic that the Chinese government is just beginning to face, which brings me to my second part, and this is the unsuccessful leg of the mission. The whole idea of bringing me along was to write a big puff piece as far as China Service Ventures was a concern, to publicize its work and goals. So you can imagine when things started falling apart how glad they were to have me on the trip, studiously documenting every failure that was going on around me. And that's what I wrote what I saw. And it'll be in the May issue of the Lutheran, and I'm sure there's something in there to make everybody upset. But that wasn't my intention. I just wrote what I saw. Okay, the failures. So we have these successes. The milk program has started, and things are going pretty well. And then we go into the Western, very, very remote regions. in a place called Xi'an in the Shaanxi province. And a little aside, we had a few extra hours. Before I tell you about the failures, we had a few extra hours to burn, so we rented a bus and went to a dinosaur artifact area. It's an area that has many, many dinosaur fossils and things. Spent the afternoon looking at dinosaur fossils and such. And one of the things, these hillsides in this area where we went were just laden with dinosaur eggs, real dinosaur eggs. And there were people with pickaxes digging out these dinosaur eggs and taking them home. So we visit this little village right there next to the dinosaur museum, and here's a guy says, would you like to buy a dinosaur egg? $125 US. Well, I thought, let's see now, Lloyd and I have three college tuitions here coming up. Should I or shouldn't I? And I wanted Pastor Lori to be here, you know. I said no, but I was sorely tempted to buy some. And can you imagine buying dinosaur eggs and bringing them back and selling them on the market? My husband's, well, I won't tell you what he thought, but anyway. And nobody on my team bought some, as far as I know. And okay, so here we are. And at this point, there are some very high-ranking communist officials from Wuhan accompanying us on our trip. And one of them is a Madam Shin. She's about 70 years old and just a charming woman, about this high, very beautiful, braided hair and back, very powerful. She's a president of the university in Wuhan, president also of a nursing school, and high ranking in the party. And she you don't get there by being a nice person, you know. She's somebody who lived through the Cultural Revolution and Mao and all that. So she made our trip as comfortable as possible and such, and she had a bunch of her helpers helping us. And off we go to this remote area where the dinosaur eggs were, because the team wanted to do some more health assessments out there. Well, after we got there and we're ready to go the next morning out to some of these schools, she and her people came out and said, sorry, you're going to have to leave. And it was very dramatic. Again, some of the younger nurses started crying, and the missionary was so upset, I can't even begin to tell you. There was a lot of talk on phones and negotiations and all of that. It was all very tense, and it took about a day and a half of negotiations trying to change their mind, but they said, sorry, get out. And so we left. And the missionary has some very important ties in Hong Kong and China that he thought he could pull this off, one of them being the director of school nursing at Hong Kong Polytechnic University, which has a long tie with the Lutherans in this area. But even he couldn't pull it off. Anyway, back in Wuhan, we took a long bus ride back to Wuhan, and we had dinner with Madam Chen, a goodbye dinner. And she told us that protocol had not been followed, and that's why we were asked to leave, that we had not gone through the correct channels in the government, which might have very well been the case because it wasn't a particularly well-planned trip, and that the right people weren't notified, the right permission wasn't gotten. And that there might be an element of truth to that. But again, it comes back to the AIDS thing. We just got too close. They don't want healthcare workers out there. They don't want to. They want to save face by not showing the outside world their underbelly, yeah. So this Madam Shin, she had befriended many of the doctors and nurses. I never really knew what to make of her. I didn't trust her. I liked her. I didn't trust her. I had a rapport with her. I don't know whose side she was on. She claimed she stayed up all night with her people, and there was evidence to that, tried to get us through. But I also think that she had the power to make the trip go forward. And as we were leaving, she told me it would have been better for China had you been allowed to go forth. And so I don't know. You know, she was just a real enigmatic person. So we left. And the healthcare team flew back early to the States. They're busy people. They're real, you know, busy people in their professions. And I went back to Hong Kong, where I hold up in a seminary for 3 or 4 days while I wrote my package. And that was a neat thing. There were a lot of Lutheran ministers there.
Which seminary were you at?
The one on the hill.
Oh, Hong Kong?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were a lot of Lutheran ministers there. And
that's a Lutheran seminary.
Yes, it is. It was so neat. If you can imagine writing a story on a hill overlooking Hong Kong, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that for me. So, but then I was there on a Friday night, and all these student seminarians were on this campus, and they were having a party at one of the local, seminary instructors who was in my little unit there, hundreds of them. And these were all the people who are going to bring China and Hong Kong into the new age. And it was really something to see these people singing and worshiping. And somebody, maybe it was a missionary, turned to me and said, "These are the people who are going to lead China in the future." And it was very, very interesting. How am I doing on time?
You're doing fine. Everybody's fascinated.
Okay. Hong Kong, that's my story, and I'll just a couple more notes, and then we'll open it up to questions. I did spend a few days in Hong Kong, totally different thing. As you know, in 1997, Hong Kong reverted back to China, but it's a separate economic zone, and the rules are different. Churches in Hong Kong have a 50-year grace period, starting in 1997. The churches that are there are allowed complete freedom, more or less, and then reevaluate after 50 years. The hope is that these churches will, that things will have shifted enough in China that this won't be an issue in 50 years, 40-some years. My group worshipped at the Truth Lutheran Church in Hong Kong, and it's just like something you'd see here, a big church. The pastor looked exactly like Pastor Lori and preached exactly like her too, right to the text and the whole business. And we had they had a couple of pews of this business here in the back, so I was able to hear. And that was very interesting. Funny rule in Hong Kong, you can't bring your kids to church until they're 18. And I don't know if that's true in the rest of China, Frank, maybe you know. But the idea is not to brainwash your children until they're an adult so that they can make up their own minds. And now this particular church, what was one of the major ones, I think, in Hong Kong, there were children there. They just are there unofficially. So I don't think it was, but officially you can't bring your kids there. Also, what made this trip really hard was the fact that you have to bribe people to get anything done in China, like a lot of the world. And this particular missionary would not pay bribes, because if he did pay bribes, then all of the congregations that support him would pull their support. So I thought that he was wrong, that I thought if you want to get something done, you better play by the local rules, but he wouldn't do it. And so every step of the way, we had to negotiate, and it was a painfully slow process and a whole lot of arguing and just almost impossible. So that's just the way things were going. Okay, well, that's it. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Let's see if I left anything out here. Look for the article in May. As far as I know, it's going to be... Oh, and one more thing. If you're interested in the history of China, as I am now, I'd recommend this book. It's a worldwide bestseller. It's called Wild Swans by someone named Jung Cheng.
Called what?
Wild Swans. Has to do with their name. And it takes you through the 20th century in China through the eyes of a grandmother, mother, and daughter. The grandmother being a concubine in the Kuomintang army general in the Kuomintang era, and then the daughter who was a communist rising up in the Communist Party right when Mao took over, and then the daughter who left. I'll pass it. Jung Chang. It's banned in. Yes, Jung Chang.